add up the pennies and the pounds will take care of themselves, my granny used to say.
Whoops, I guess granny didn't hear. No pennies anymore. Stephen Harper cut those too. But we'll take nickels, we'll take dimes, we'll take loonies and toonies and $5 bills and $50 bills and even $100 bills.
You can donate at rabble.ca/donate.
This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's radio, free radio.
You're listening to Election Sound Up, news and views about this very long election campaign and the issues as they unfold. I'm Victoria Fenner, and this is a production of Rabble.ca. On this week's Election Sound Up, Rabble.ca's parliamentary correspondent Carl Nirenberg has some thoughts about last night's Monk debate on foreign policy. It was held September 28th at Roy Thomson Hall in Toronto. Here's Carl.
So last night's Monk debate is getting great reviews from a lot of the media for being substantive, and people are relieved that we didn't have the constant crosstalk and interrupting. My own view is the chief sinner in the interrupting department has always been Justin Trudeau, and both Mulcair and Harper get blamed for being, for taking part in talking over other people. But in a sense, especially in the case of Mulcair, they've been the victim of it, and really didn't have any choice but to sort of try to keep talking when Trudeau was talking over them. Last night, Mulcair called on Rudyard Griffiths, the host and questioner, to call Mr. Trudeau to order when Trudeau tried to shout him down. And that was, to me, a very good moment and a telling moment that Trudeau often seems to be uncomfortable with somebody making counter-arguments to his own, and he thinks his best, most effective strategy is to keep talking, regardless of other people's right to have their own say. But we didn't have that last night. At that one moment, Rudyard Griffiths turned the floor over to Mulcair. So people got to say what they had to say at any rate, which is a relief, but the media is making much of the exchange where Justin Trudeau evoked the memory of his father. Personally, I found that to be total demagoguery. I thought there was really no reason. He was not responding to what Tom Mulcair had actually said, and Tom Mulcair was not making some kind of unfair reference to Pierre Elliott Trudeau. He was merely referring to a historic event in 1970, the invocation of the War Measures Act, and the fact that his party, the NDP, had voted against that, even though it was an unpopular thing to do at the time. And the NDP was, this is a great tradition that Mulcair was trying to say, of the NDP supporting civil liberties, even when public opinion at the moment does not seem to be on their side. They nonetheless have the political courage to do that. That was all he was trying to say. He wasn't trying to say that Pierre Trudeau was a particular scoundrel or that Justin Trudeau was responsible for Pierre Trudeau's views. But Justin used it for his great Oprah moment to talk emotionally about his father and the fact that this was the 15th anniversary of his father's death. It wasn't really what was being discussed at all. And Justin himself had to say, well, I'm not going to address the issue of C-51. I'm going to make a little speech about my father now because you've given me an opportunity by parenthetically and in an apposite way mentioning his name. But more broadly speaking, the debate it was structured in such a way that there were a whole series of substantive issues framed very much in a kind of Monk Center, a Monk Center so-called mainstream, somewhat small-c conservative view of the world. But there we had them. The issues were laid out. And Rudyard Griffiths had said in advance, I hope that the leaders will try to answer the questions they put to them and not merely revert to their talking points. And from the outset, he put a question to Tom Mulcair. The very first question, when would an NDP government be willing to use military force? And Tom Mulcair, since he had the opening shot, wanted to make sure he got in a bunch of points about how we're going to have a more humane policy and how we have to be concerned about refugees and how we have to be concerned about other issues. And he actually, he managed to get in the fact, interesting enough, that his own wife, Catherine Pinhas, comes from a family of Jewish refugees who had originally fled from where they lived to Turkey, then to France. They were refugees from the Holocaust. So he made that point. It wasn't actually the question that Mr. Griffiths had asked him, although he did get to it eventually, and they were maybe on a second round, and he said that the NDP is willing to use military force and engage in military force in situations such as Libya, where the operation is sanctioned by the UN or by NATO, but did not think that the current airstrikes in Syria and Iraq were on that scale, and they definitely are not sanctioned by either the UN or by NATO. It was a bit of a technical point. Nonetheless, because Mulcair was all ready to participate and help in that effort, but simply not militarily, nonetheless, he sort of got to it to answer the question. On the refugee issue, we had an opportunity to have an airing of that issue. One thought there, just because of the luck of the draw, where Trudeau got to go first before Mulcair, that he got in the more powerful arguments at that point, although Mulcair had already made some of those arguments. But there was a missed opportunity from everybody when, again, second time in a debate, when Trudeau, in a salutary way, raised the fact that the government has canceled health care for many refugees, and Harper said falsely that they're only canceling health care for failed refugee applicants. That's actually not true. They're canceling for many more refugees than that, refugees or would-be refugees. But neither Mulcair nor Trudeau got into the weeds of the policy to say, I mean, there was a letter to the editor not too long ago from a prominent Canadian doctor who has been fighting this, saying the Prime Minister was completely false. It's not true. The people being cut off health care are not only the failed applicants who are in appeal. And by the way, those so-called failed applicants are people who are appealing their situation, so they're still living in Canada and still require health care and are still under our protection and are still considered potential refugees until they've exhausted all avenues of appeal. So there's no reason to cut them off at that point. It's like saying that a person who is appealing his conviction on a crime is necessarily guilty. We won't know until he's guilty until all his avenues of appeal are exhausted. Nonetheless, the people who are cut off also include people who come from a designated list of so-called safe countries, and there are people whose cases haven't even been heard again, and people who are not government-sponsored refugees have limited access to health care. So there's lots of people whose health care is being cut off, and the government didn't even respect the court decision to restore health care. So that was a wasted opportunity because the opposition leaders did not get into the weeds and the substance of it. And in general, I felt that Harper was the one who was willing to engage in some cases falsely, and in some cases using false arguments or somewhat twisted arguments, but engage in detailed discussion of policy, whereas the other two leaders tended to be more rhetorical. Trudeau is very rhetorical and very voluble, but not always logical or rational or factual, and Mulcair seems a little bit mostly to be micro-targeting. He wanted to reach certain people and make sure he pushed certain buttons, but one would have wished, okay, Mr. Mulcair, engage in detail in some of these policy issues and give us some facts, particularly on C-51. When the question of C-51 came on, I think it was fine and well for Mulcair to raise the NDP's glorious history in opposing measures that abridge civil liberties, but one would have liked him to just say the reason C-51 is bad is because it does this, it does that, and it does the other thing. He didn't do that. He didn't enumerate the fact that C-51, for instance, allows the security services to take actions that are specifically contrary to the Charter of Rights as long as they get secret permission from a judge. He didn't mention that. He didn't mention that it potentially makes certain kinds of speech and advocacy illegal or suspect, and that C-51 could very likely, based on their record, have authorities, the RCMP and other security services, investigating environmentalists and Aboriginal First Nations groups. In fact, Trudeau opened it up when he tried to say, oh, well, the NDP scaremongering when they say that First Nations groups and environmentalists and people like that are going to be targeted. They have already been targeted. There's a record of it, but Mulcair didn't reach for that and make that argument. And similarly on climate change, I found that quite interesting. I mean, the Prime Minister, Trudeau was much more effective in pushing back on the Prime Minister on the climate change issue than Mulcair. Maybe, again, the luck of the draw, he got the stage at that point, where especially when Harper tried to say that well, we're going to finally eliminate coal-fired plants. And Trudeau said, well, it's Ontario who's doing that. If you're taking credit for what the provinces are doing, and you yourself weren't even in favor of it. You're trying to take credit for what others are doing that you actually opposed. And, you know, when Mulcair had some arguments on that. But here, climate change is the NDP's strongest. The strongest suit, in a sense, in that they actually have a robust policy that they just announced for setting a hard cap on carbon emissions. And Mulcair didn't have the force and passion to really push that home. And Trudeau's argument, he started yelling at Mulcair, now again, he shouldn't have been allowed to, saying, well, you're not going to be able to achieve any of this because you want to achieve a balanced budget and you're not going to have money to spend on it. It was absurd. It's nothing to do with having hard caps on carbon emissions. It has nothing to do with whether you have a fiscal balance or not. But Mulcair allowed himself to be dragged into that and then got onto a useless argument about the virtue of fiscal deficits versus fiscal surpluses, which was not the issue. And he didn't really. And the funny thing is that the Liberals have no policy on climate change. Their policy on climate change is to talk tough and to say we're going to do something about it, but they're so timid about proposing anything specific because their former leader, Stéphane Dion, got burned with that way back in 2008 that they refused to have a policy of any sort. The Liberals are really falling down on environment, but Mr. Mulcair didn't take advantage of that.
So summing things up then, Carl, what do you think that last night's debate accomplished that none of the others have? What can the voters take away?
Well, the last night's debate accomplished at least the fact that we got a debate in which all leaders got to speak without being interrupted by the others. It accomplished showing Trudeau to being in fact why we were keep talking about him being underestimated or being lacking in substance. He definitely managed to get his facts and his arguments memorized and to show an ability to be spontaneous. And he shows himself to be the winner, the theatrical winner of the person who really knows how to play an audience and how to play on emotions. Mulcair definitely shows himself to be, as well as we expected, very much in command of the details, but has disappointingly again showed himself to be in this campaign unwilling to really sharpen the differences and distinctions and define policies, and being almost unwilling to get into the substantive details on policy. Harper, there was so much. Harper pretty much gets away with being the guy who is rational, cool, and experienced, even if a lot of what he has to say doesn't add up and isn't factual. But I want to circle back to one other example, though, of a missed opportunity. When we had the question of the Ukraine and what to do about the Ukraine, the NDP has wanted to attack the government for a long time on the fact that it's hypocritical about sanctions against Russians in response to their annexing part of the Ukraine, the Crimea. And they mentioned two names. These two guys are on other people's sanctions list, but they're not on the Canadian sanctions list. But Mr. Mulcair never said who these people were, what they did, why they should be. I never heard of them. Who were they? I mean, it was an inside baseball argument that they never turned to the audience or turned to Canadians and said, this is why you can't really believe the seriousness of the sanctions that this government is imposing. When somebody's business interests in Canada are affected, the fact that somebody is a major economic player in Russia and is of no import for the government. So, overall, it was a bit of a frustrating exercise, and it's getting all the reviews are getting about image and style, and and people like Michael Harris are gushing all over how Trudeau was a fighter and Trudeau seemed to be the winner, and Mulcair again seemed tentative. I wouldn't worry about style. Where I wouldn't worry about Mulcair being tentative was on substance, where he had really strong substantive arguments but didn't always reach for them.
That was Rabble.ca's parliamentary correspondent Carl Nirenberg with a recap and analysis of last night's Monk debate on foreign policy. Always good to read Carl's articles on Rabble.ca, and even better to hear him talk to us.
Turn the tide. They try to tell us black is really white.
I'm Victoria Fenner, and you've been listening to Election Soundup on Rabble.ca. Thanks for listening. Tune in again next week.